Welcome to Pit Pass Moto, the show that keeps you up to speed on the latest in motorcycling and brings the biggest names in motorcycle racing right to you. I'm Dave Sulecki.
And I'm PJ Doran.
This week we have, from Moto America, Sean Bice and Paul Carruthers.
Moto America, the home of the AMA Superbike Championship featuring 190-mile-an-hour superbikes, is the official sponsor of Pit Pass Moto. Moto America, the official AMA road racing series for North America at MotoAmerica.com. Tickets, info, and complete 2021 schedule available at MotoAmerica.com/tickets. Don't miss a minute of action, practice, qualifying, races, and video on demand with Moto America Live Plus streaming. Follow Moto America on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. This week's Pit Pass trivia question is, when was the first production slick motorcycle tire produced? We'll be back with that answer after we talk to Sean Bice and Paul Carruthers.
Greetings from Evergreen Podcasts. We're rolling out a listener survey and we want to hear from you. The information in the survey will help us gather statistics and in turn make our shows more appealing to advertisers. I know most people don't like ads, but this is one of the only ways our shows make money and help keep their lights on. We promise it will only take a few minutes, but the impact on our podcasts will be tremendous. As a token of our appreciation, we'll randomly select one lucky participant each month to win an exclusive merchandise package from Evergreen Podcasts. Head to evergreenpodcast.com/listenersurvey to help a show and possibly get some free stuff for doing so. We can't thank you enough for the support. Now back to the show.
Welcome to Pit Pass today. Off track with Carruthers and Bice creators, Mr. Carruthers, Mr. Bice. Welcome to our show. How are you doing today?
Very good. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, doing great. Thanks for having us on here. I noticed Chris Parrish was just on, so it's always good to follow up Chris Parrish. He's quite a character. So
absolutely, and I think you guys had him right before we did.
Yeah, we did.
It's funny how that works. So let's get right into it and talk about our Moto America season and racing in general. It's been incredible. What have been any season surprises that you guys have seen this year? Anything that was a little bit unexpected?
Well, I can start by saying that I'll completely go on record and say that I was surprised by the amount of winning that Jake Gagne's done.
Yes.
I knew he would be, I knew he would have a good season. He's on a very good team and a very good motorcycle. But I don't know that anybody would have predicted this to happen. I fully thought that, we'd have five or six guys winning races. And I thought it would come down to the rider who made the fewest mistakes that would end up being champion. And Jake has flipped that around completely and just dominated. As much as we'd like to mix it up a little bit with different winners, it's a pleasure to watch him ride this year, and it's a pleasure to see what he's doing, because he's riding the motorcycle like he's never ridden a motorcycle before, and you can tell he's confident and comfortable, and that equates to him being very fast, and that's why he's dominated. So I think that stands out for me this year, is just what a surprise it was. Not that he was winning races, but that he's been able to win, basically all the races.
Yeah. And, it's interesting because at the first race of the season, of course, Matthew Skoltz won that race. And we thought, because we kept talking about it's the most level playing field that we've ever had. It's going to be an amazing year without the Overlord and Cameron Beaubier being there. But, when I was thinking about being on this podcast, and I was thinking about what I was going to talk about, one of the things I realized is last year we kind of were always saying, well, if not for Cameron Beaubier, and this year it's a little bit if not for Jake Gagne. And I know last year Matthew and some of the other guys kind of felt like they were almost winning their own race because Cameron was so far ahead. And Jake's kind of doing it this year. But then I got to thinking, and what if Cameron was still in our series? I wonder if Jake would, how that would go, if it would be those guys battling back and forth. It's just, I mean, Jake was on that team last year, didn't have obviously anywhere near the season that he is this year. So it's just funny how it happens, you know? It's just crazy.
Without doubt, Jake has shown a level of dominance that I couldn't agree more. He's obviously an incredible racer, but he picked something up in the off season and in some fashion, or found something in his bike that really clicked for him, because it's been amazing the level of dominance he's put on, and there's a lot of good guys keeping him honest though.
Yeah, and I think if you look at, I think this shows how important your crew is, and really more importantly even than that is your crew chief. His crew chief this year is John Cornwell, who has extensive background in all things technical with motorcycles. In addition to being a very good motorcycle racer himself, he won dirt tracks, he won road race championships in Canada. He raced 250s here. He's raced everything, and he's raced it well. And if you watch those two work, you know, on hot pit during a practice or qualifying session, you can see how well they work together. The advice that he gives Jake, the amount of listening that Jake does, you can tell there's a lot of respect between the two. And I think that's probably made, it probably is the biggest difference from in his season from last year to this year, is just the confidence and the ability that John has brought to the team and really made a difference for Jake. And you can just see it in the way he rides the motorcycle.
Yeah, and it's funny too, because Paul and I have known John Cornwell forever and know him as Paul alluded to, you know, a two-stroke rider from the back in the day, 250 bikes and stuff. And it's funny, he has on his calf, he's got a maple leaf in it, a tattoo, and it also kind of has the year that he won a championship. I think it was in Canada, but you know, we've known him as a rider, and he's always been a fairly quiet guy. And you know, he was a suspension guy on Westby Racing, and he didn't say a whole lot, but I would sometimes see him walk up to Matthew and almost hold him by his ears with his helmet on and kind of get right down in the face mask. And he was talking to him, and I was like, well, that's kind of weird. A suspension guy is kind of getting in the head of Matthew Schultz. And lo and behold, you know, here he is, a crew chief this year, and he carries himself a little bit different too. He's a little more talkative. He certainly speaks about a lot more things than just suspension now. And it's one of those cool things where he's always had it in him and has always been a well-rounded guy because of being a rider and a tuner anyway. But, you know, it's a great chance for him to do what he's doing and to step up. He's a rookie crew chief, and he's, you know, leading the championship with a pretty amazing win streak going on right now, and has a chance to break a record for the most wins ever in Superbike, in any season in Superbike. So it's pretty cool for also Jake and Jonathan Cornwell.
So in Superbike, guys, that's the positive side. I guess the flip side would be, who did you expect coming into the season was going to maybe be a little stronger? Maybe struggling a little bit this year to get things to gel. What team do you see that happening with?
Well, I think, you know, I think Cameron Petersons has done really well on the M4 X-Star Suzuki team. But then I think Bobby Fong's had a year that, I mean, even he would admit hasn't been so good. I don't know what the real reasons are for that. I mean, the guy can obviously still ride a motorcycle, and when things are together well for him, he finishes back on the podium. But he's had some bad luck, and it just seems like one of those down-off years for Bobby. And I don't think it's deserved. He works really hard, and we saw last year that he's perfectly capable of winning races from the front and withstanding pressure from, actually last year it was Jake Gagne mostly giving him pressure from behind. So it was that to me is a bit of a shock. It's also been good for the team with Cameron Petersen coming in and doing so well. So at least that balances it out a little bit for those guys, so they're not just down in the dumps. But yeah, I expected a bit more from Bobby.
Yeah, and for me, I think, you know, it's Loris Baz that surprises me a little bit. I mean, I drank the Kool-Aid along with everybody else during the off season in terms of, you know, everybody saying, oh, he's going to dominate our series. And I mean, he's a world-class rider, and he's riding like a world-class rider. The guy's unbelievable. He's an absolute animal out on the track, and, you know, he understands road racing so well, and he knows how to do it. You know, he's got incredible race craft, and he's certainly a fierce competitor. And they just, those guys have had some bad luck here and there along the way. And it's, some of it's been, you know, by his own making with regard to crashing and stuff, but other times it's not. And it's just, it's a tough situation because, you know, he's in the hunt all the time, but I thought, I thought if anybody was going to go on a streak this year, it might be Loris, because of what that team did with Lorenzo Zanetti last year at the end of the year when they came on so strong with Ducati Corsa involved and Araldo Ferracci involved, and you know they won last year, and it's a little bit surprising. I would have thought if somebody would have told me at this point in the season he hadn't have won a race yet, I would have been pretty shocked. It's not any kind of a detriment to that team. It's just kind of the way the chips have fallen and the way things have gone together. But he's still, you know, very much involved in the hunt, and it's very possible that he may win. You know, we've got six races. We've got three coming up at New Jersey and another three at Barber Motorsports Park to close out our season. And it's very possible that he, you know, could go on a tear or at least win some of those races, except, you know, obviously Jake is very stout this year. So that was a surprise for me, I think.
How about the development of guys like Rocco Landers and Sean Dillon Kelly? I mean, they've pretty much been on track. Would you agree as far as where we expected them to go as they move through the series, as far as classes?
Yeah, there's not much of a surprise there for me. I fully expected the Supersport Championship to be fought out between Richie Escalante and Sean Dillon Kelly. And I'm not sure I would have said that it would have gone Sean Dillon's way, because I thought Richie kind of had the upper hand last year. But you can see that that's kind of flipped a little bit. But their racing is, I mean, those guys are so close. You could take either one of them and do whatever you wanted with them, and they'd perform well. They're at a really high level. Rocco, at least initially, I was a little bit, not disappointed, but I expected more, and I was probably expecting too much when you think about, you know, that he's just a young kid, and it's a pretty big jump from the classes he was racing in Junior Cup and Twins Cup to jump up to Supersport and race with the guys that are in that class. But of late, you almost expect him now to be that third guy on the podium, or at least close to it and in that battle for third. So I think now he's probably at about the level I expected him to be. He's not going to be able to just jump up to Sean Dillon Kelly and Richie Escalante's level right away, but I think he's done a good job of kind of chipping away at it. He's had some crashes, but he's you can tell he just keeps chipping away, and it's not big chunks, but it's little chunks, but it's got him to the point where he's, you know, consistently on the podium.
Yeah, it's funny about Rocco. You know, I think we got used to the fact that, I mean, he was winning everything and winning championships. I mean, he won Junior Cup, then he did it a second year at the same time as winning Twins Cup championships. So he's got three championships under his belt, and he moves into Supersport, and he's doing exactly what we want our young riders to do, which is to climb that ladder through our series. And I think Twins Cup was a good intermediary for him to move into Supersport. And he's doing great. I mean, he's, like Paul said, he's really come on lately. He's really starting to acclimate to it. But, you know, it's one of those things with Richie and Sean Dillon Kelly. I mean, they're sort of on another plane. And Richie, I thought he was going to repeat this year. And that's not taking anything away from Sean Dillon Kelly at all. It's just, you know, Richie had such an amazing season last year, but it goes to show you that number one is a heavy, heavy number and a heavy number plate to wear on your bike. And, you know, they did do some balancing with the bike this year, but I think more of it's, you know, Sean's just advanced more. He's still extremely young. He's a lot younger than Richie is. And, you know, he just has stepped up so much. And Richie kind of started off on his back foot. He had broken his collarbone in a training accident on a bicycle with Umberto Baca, who is his team guy. And, you know, so he was right there to see it happen. And he kind of had that issue in the beginning, and I think he sort of passed it off as not that being that big a deal. And he's way past that now. But recently he also broke a bone in his ankle or in his foot, right, Paul? I mean, it's something.
Yeah, in his foot.
Yeah. So he had another bit of adversity that he's dealing with, and he's still right there. And a lot of that stuff doesn't really affect him too much on the bike. But Sean just is so dominant, and he's, you know, he's got the bit in his teeth, so to speak. You know, he really knows now he can get it done. And you know, Richie's probably it's going to be tough. I mean, it's insurmountable almost at this point. And, you know, both those guys are awesome to see out on the track, because they fight, you know, tooth and nail, and they took each other out at one round, which, you know, gave a win to Stefano Mesa, but Stefano Mesa was there to win that race when those guys both went down. But other than that, it's been one or the other at the front. And, you know, the other guys that are moving up, Rocco Landers, Benjamin Smith, you know, some of those guys, Stefano, obviously, some of those guys are there, but they're not quite on that level of those two guys. But it's like last year, it's fantastic to watch those guys race against each other.
Guys, I think Moto America's done a really good job of kind of drawing in some new blood, some new interest with the new interesting classes that they've added over the last couple seasons. You know, the Mini Cup obviously developed new riders, but the King of the Baggers, the Super Hooligan, the Build Train Race Program. Talk about those series and, you know, what they mean to Moto America in the future.
Well, maybe I can address the baggers and let Sean do some of the other ones. But, you know, the baggers, the King of the Baggers has just been huge for us. Obviously, the thing started last year at Laguna Seca with an invitational, and we saw the popularity of it then. And, you know, I was kind of cynical about the whole thing as far as, you know, I'm kind of a purist when it comes to road racing. It's all I've really ever known. And it just was like, I just couldn't picture it. And I couldn't picture it in any way that was pretty, so to speak. So when those bikes fired off at Laguna Seca last year, and I watched them come over that turn one hill and into turn two, and they were backing it in, and, you know, it seemed like just a couple of laps with the guys that had done some testing, I was blown away. I was like, wow, this is really cool to watch. I mean, it was cool to watch with just one bike, which generally isn't the case, but when you can see those, that big of a bike go as fast as it goes with those bags, and it's hard not to be impressed with the skill involved to make that happen. It's also impressive that those motorcycles are capable of that. So, you know, we went into this year with adding some races, obviously, and they turned out to be great. And Harley Davidson picked it up so that they were competitive and ended up winning the championship with Kyle Wyman. And it's just a really good thing for our paddock. I mean, there's new semis there. There's new blood in the paddock, different riders, you know, some older established stars. So it's been, I mean, it's far and above exceeded my expectations for what it could possibly be. And I think it's done a great job of bringing new fans to the track. And I think when you get new fans to the track for something like King of the Baggers, they're obviously going to watch your superbike races and your super sport races. And I think what happens is they go home, you know, they come as bagger fans and they go home as Moto America fans. And really that's all you can hope for.
Yeah. And it's funny. I think, you know, Paul and I both kind of looked at it a little bit with a jaundiced eye, but I think we both said, well, the president of Moto America, three-time world champion, Wayne Rainey, is really into this baggers thing. So I suppose we ought to get behind it too. And, you know, like Paul said, when we saw him out on the track and, you know, to see the bikes close up and see what they do with them to, you know, get them up off the ground a little bit more and how they can actually drag a knee on a bagger is amazing. And you can see that those riders are having so much fun on them. I mean, Kyle Wyman is over the moon now that he's a factory Harley Davidson rider. He's wanted that his entire life. And his brother Travis is part of that too. And, you know, the motor company, as they call them, has definitely stepped up and embraced that. And Indian has too, with Roland Sands as well. And it's just the manufacturers have really gotten behind it. And when we do social media posts on that series, it just blows up. It goes crazy. So, you know, we're happy. And I used to say this about the OEMs. You know, I'm particularly a fan of sport bikes, but when these OEMs have cruiser bikes that I don't particularly ride, I hope they sell a billion of them, because that enables them to have, you know, sport bikes and other things. And that's kind of with us. I mean, I hope Baggers brings a million fans to our series. And hey, while you're there, we've got, you know, all these other classes of racing. And you mentioned Hooligans. That was a one-off that kind of came out of nowhere and was developed by Roland Sands at WeatherTech Raceway Laguna Seca. And that was cool too. I mean, it was a great chance to see Chris Fillmore again. And Andy DeBrino, who's up in the Pacific Northwest, a couple guys that are involved with KTM. And we got to see some different motorcycles involved in that series as well. And we'll see if that, you know, what happens with that next year. But that's one of those multidisciplinary things where there's flat track involved as well. So they've got some other types of races they're going to do later this year. But, you know, baggers, we hope it expands to a bigger footprint and more rounds next year. I want to mention real quick, quick our Mini Cup by Motul series, which has been tremendous the past couple of years. It's really fun to see these kids, you know, who start out at 6 to 14, I believe, is the breakoff on that when they are eligible to move into Junior Cup. And we've had some Mini Cup riders move up to Junior Cup, including Kayla Yakov and Avery Dreyer and a couple of other riders. But it's so cool that we thought Junior Cup was cool seeing these young kids do their thing. But now to see some of these riders that are so much younger than that, and they absolutely have the racecraft, the body position. They just look awesome riding around on those motorcycles. And it's almost like you took a road race and you put it into a copier and you reduced it in size like 50% or something and everything, the bike, the rider, you know, the amount of track that's there, but it looks for all the world like it, and you know, a totally full size road racing track, and the kids enjoy it. The parents are involved, and this is where the stepping stone starts. You know, they go from there into the rest of our series. So we've got a lot of budding champions and riders moving into our series out of Mini Cup as well. So it's terrific.
Yeah, it's been awesome. And you didn't touch on the one that I most recently got to enjoy at the first time in a long time facility, Brainerd. I was up at that race, got to see the BTR program come to fruition with Melissa yes. Paris and all the racers. And it was amazing. The energy those girls had throughout the weekend, but especially after their race, you know, on the podium, pretty much the paddock emptied to go to the BTR podium celebration. And it was absolutely awesome. So big shout out to Moto America and Royal Enfield for giving Melissa Paris the reins to do what she clearly was built to do, because it was just impressive top to bottom.
Yeah, really glad you brought that up, PJ, because for sure that's an awesome series. And, you know, speaking of podcasts and the fact that we have had one, we had four of them on a recent podcast with us, and it was a delight to talk to them, because there are seven riders. We spoke to four, and they're all very different, all kinds of walks of life, all kinds of backgrounds, from engineers to photographers to a woman that works in a nail salon. And, you know, they all, their commonality is their love of motorcycles. Some of it they've gotten into because of their family or their husbands, but they've gone from being pillions or passengers to being riders, and now they're racers. And their respective partners are actually somewhat jealous of them getting all the stardom in road racing. So that's been really enjoyable to watch. And, you know, we've got more of that to come. So they'll be at Barber you know, get to race again. And we're going to have the other three on our own podcast, but they're terrific women. And yeah, hats off to Melissa and also to Bree Poland, who works for Royal Enfield, for putting this whole thing together. And it is a joy to watch these women race.
Without doubt, this has been an incredible season of Moto America racing, and lots of other racing too, but we're talking about Moto America, and it's been incredible. I can't wait for these last couple rounds. Sadly, our time's coming to a close, guys. Want to thank you so much for joining us on Pit Pass today. It's been wonderful, and we look forward to talking to you some more, and I hope I see you at the track.
Yeah, thanks for thinking of us, PJ. It was fun, as always, and anytime you need someone to talk to, Sean and I are especially happy to do so. If we can get Sean to shut up a little bit. Sean's great, and it's been fun. Thank you.
Thank you.
You bet. And thank you guys for being sponsors of ours. It means the world to us, and we hope we get to keep doing it with you.
Yeah, it's great. It's a great partnership.
Sure you will. Thank you.
This week's Pit Pass trivia question was, when was the first production slick motorcycle tire produced? The answer is, the first dedicated motorcycle drag bike slick was developed by the English Avon Company in 1960 with the help of George Brown. In upcoming motorcycle racing action, we have Moto America at New Jersey, September 10 through 12. And of course, the MotoGP round Aragon, Spain will be September the 12th.
In outdoor AMA motocross, we've got the final round at Hangtown MX coming up September 11th. Thank you again to our guests for being with us today, and thank you for tuning in. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to follow us on your favorite podcast app so you never miss an episode. If you have a moment, please rate and review us. We really appreciate it. Make sure you're also following us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and visit pitpassmoto.com, where you can check out our blog.
This has been a production of Evergreen Podcasts. A special thank you to Tommy Boy Halverson, Chris Bishop, producer Leah Longbreak, and audio engineer Eric Coltnow. I'm PJ Doran.
I'm Dave Selecki.
We'll see you next week.
Have you ever wanted to know how to win a Formula One Grand Prix? I mean, really know. Know about the driver tactics from the cockpit, the strategy calls from the pit wall, and even the mind games in the paddock. There's a lot more that goes into winning a Grand Prix than just 90 minutes of racing. So every week on the F1 Strategy Report, we're taking a deep dive into the decisions that shape every result. Hey there, my name is Michael Laminato, and every week I'm joined by an expert guest from the paddock to talk through the big calls that won the race and the missteps that resulted in bitter defeat. Before every race, we'll look back at the previous year's result and consult the current form guide, and we'll be in your feed after every Grand Prix dissecting the outcome and what it means for the championship. So for your regular hit of Formula One analysis, subscribe to the F1 Strategy Report wherever you get your favourite podcasts. The Strategy Report is a Beer Mogul podcast on the Evergreen Podcasts Network. My name's Michael Laminato, and I'll catch you after the checkered flag.